and welcome to the Trash Tapes Podcast as part of the Enigmatic Productions Network. If you love bad cinema and incredible deep dives into cult film, then you have come to the right place. So if you like what you hear and want to support us, you can do so by donating some funds to our Buy Me a Coffee website, along with the Acast supporter feature. All of these can be found in the description below. And now, on with the show.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When something like really bad happens, like in the movie, yeah. Like something where you go, oh, that's terrible. Why the hell did they do that? They just, in the next scene, they transition to a shot of boobs and you just instantly forget about it. And then you forgot what happens. Like, there was something that I was really angry about, like really cross about, like 2 minutes ago. For the life of me, I don't know what it was. Because Holly Valance is back.
Are we saying that this movie is kind of like, you know, the tiny little flashy device from Men in Black? Like, every time you get annoyed at something, it just shows you, like, a bikini shot of Holly Valance, and then you forget why you were mad.
Wait, what? Where am I?
Now, that's an endorsement. Imagine trying to resell this movie. It's like...
I did enjoy it, and I felt like because my partner came back from Wales yesterday. She went to bed, and it's like, for full context and for full clarity, I'm about to watch a movie full of boobs and butts, but there's an important reason why I'm watching a movie full of boobs and butts.
Boobs and butts.
Oh, you're finally doing DOA. Yes, I'm finally doing DOA.
Thank God for that.
You are about to experience trash cinema. Oh my God.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Trash Tape. One man's trash is another man's treasure. I am your host, Johan Schiphol, and the inflictor of pain. And I am not here with my usual victim and DJ. He is not here at the moment. Unfortunately, he is busy because he's moving home. He's moving to a nice, shiny new house. And so it was going to be a little bit of a while to actually get him back. But I wanted to do an episode in between. We needed something a bit more lighthearted, and so I have a new temporary co-host for today, and so that would be Greg. Hi, Greg.
Hello, Johan. How are we?
I am superb. Thank you for joining me, Greg, in what seems to be a long time coming.
It has. I know it's finally come together. Obviously, I joined Enigmatic team a little over 14 months ago. Quite soon after, it's like, Greg, you need to buy this movie because we are going to be talking about this movie soon. Then obviously COVID reared its ugly head, and here we are 14 months later, we're finally talking about it.
And the thing is, it's kind of funny because you always reminded me of this throughout the 14 months. Like, you know, I bought this movie, right? Like, you know, I bought it.
You know, I spent my own hard-earned sterling on on this piece of trash. We need to do something with it, Mr. Schiphol. And we have. Oh, we have.
We found the perfect window for it. Just before we actually go into it, Greg, before we do it, we talk about what the movie we're doing is, could you sort of just... To our listeners, do you want to just talk about who you are, what you do, what's going on, etc.?
Sure. Well, my name's Greg. I am one of the content creators, a part of the Enigmatic team. I head up the video game side of things, which makes it a perfect transition for my Trash Tapes debut to be with a video game adaptation, sorry, a movie adaptation of a video game. And well done to you, Johan, for picking a movie slash game that I've never played. What a way to introduce me. But yes, I make videos regarding video games. I do streaming alongside you as well, Johan, on Twitch. And I also on Twitter at GregJ_Cummings1, where you can find me discussing video games, wrestling, and also heading up the PlayStation Access Fans Twitter account as well.
Ooh, yeah, that was a thing that happened recently, isn't it?
So. Yes, there's something else, another Twitter account for me to manage. Yay!
My goodness, so much. So yeah, okay, so yeah, here's the thing, right? I did get you a video game movie, right? And yes, it is one that you clearly may not have played. But the reason why I gave you this is because I want you to be on the Trash Tapes more often. But couldn't just give you something that I couldn't throw you right into the deep end. I really couldn't. So I thought I'd give you something, honestly, that I thought, in terms of trash film, is surprisingly lighter than what I could have given you.
So you're easing me in. I'm not being pushed in the deep end here. This is me taking a few sort of baby steps in the shallow end. Is this what you would describe this as?
Shallow being the ultimate word for this movie, yeah, because we are going to talk about DOA, Dead or Alive.
Tell me about the diamonds.
Well, they're a girl's best friend, and they're forever. Would you hand me my bra, please?
From international spies to elite assassins. Greatest warriors.
Welcome to DOA.
Have been brought together.
Fights can happen any place against anyone.
For the ultimate competition.
Lydia, it's showtime.
Not now. I'm in my underwear.
Seems like you found yourself a special friend.
We'll settle up tomorrow, sweetie.
But behind the competition, a secret technology is stealing their powers to create an unstoppable army.
If we're going to make it, we need to work together.
Why don't we just split them up evenly?
DOA, Dead or Alive.
We are doing DOA, Dead or Alive, which is... It's got a weird and interesting soft spot to me. And that's kind of the reason why I want to give this to you. Because it is, like I said, describing it at the beginning, it's lighter affair. It is dumb. Is dumb. It is cheesy. It is ridiculous. You, at the moment, you're showing me that at the minute, where if you just look at the DVD cover of this, it's just chest first, basically, right at the front of the cover.
With underneath the tagline, half-naked babes, kung fu fighting, sit back, relax, and enjoy. But my favorite bit about that sentence is, on the film review, on the film cover, it just says, under who quoted that, film review? Is that an official licensed reviewer, or is that just somebody who didn't want to stay anonymous and just said, "Oh, I'm just a film reviewer. I'm not going to say who said that."
Well, maybe we could do a little bit of a deep dive into that, because on this podcast, I sometimes go into what the critics have said. So maybe we can find out who this film reviewer actually is. Maybe we can actually go and say, you know what, about time you just sort of admit what you have done here. So,
hold your hands up.
All right. So for people who are joining us and saying, like, what the hell is this thing? Okay, let's break this down. First of all, we need to make this very clear. The movie is called DOA, Dead or Alive, not Dead or Alive. There are several movies called Dead or Alive. And if you decide and want to watch and join along, you kind of need to watch this one. This is the 2006 martial arts film loosely based on the fighting game, right? The Tecmo Team Ninja fighting game Dead or Alive. It is directed by Corey Yoon, who, if you know who Corey Yoon is, he happens to be, first of all, he was a co-director of the Transporter movie. So that is something. But also, he is a very well-renowned martial artist and stunt coordinator, right? This was his first and only...
And only, yeah.
Western fully solo-directed movie.
And I'm not surprised.
This is the only proper considered westernized thing. Because he co-directed The Transporter. He didn't fully direct. He co-directed that one. So he kind of was saying, like, well, this one will be my breakout first off movie. And I can imagine almost a conversation going, well, it's based off a video game franchise, a popular video game franchise. This could be an easy way to you to get into the market rather than just doing something else. Because before then, he directed a lot of other movies, but a lot of them were pretty much Hong Kong exclusive, right? They were Hong Kong or Chinese films. They were, but again, big action kung fu schlock. So kind of in a weird way, he's kind of perfect for this movie. You have also quite a few other people on as a cast. So we've already mentioned that we're going to mention a few of them. So first of all, we've got Jamie Presley, who, you know from quite a few things already, but you probably know her pretty well from My Name is Earl, the TV series.
Familiar.
Yep. But also, she also knows a little bit about martial arts because she was also had a recurring role in the sadly but totally understandable dead Mortal Kombat TV show, Mortal Kombat Conquest.
Oh, right. Okay. That is new information.
So she plays the role of Micah. She was a considerable recurring character in that. I remember watching Mortal Kombat Conquest as a kid. I generally thought it was the coolest thing ever. If I sat down and watched it again, I probably would think he was a giant piece of dog turd.
Yeah.
I probably think it was dog turd. But
oh, absolutely.
Great sure. stuff. There's also other people as well. Like we have Devonna Coy, who's famously known for her before this in her role in Sin City. Her name was Little Miho.
Oh yes, right. And she was also in Too Fast, Too Furious as well, right?
She was in Too Fast, Too Curious as Suki.
Yeah,
and she was also in very similar things as well. She was in Zoom. She was in War. I remember War. That's the weird Jason Statham versus Jet Li movie. She's in that.
Yes, yeah.
Which also was co-directed again by Corey Yoon. Looks like they're kind of like having. It looks like they got a bit of a relationship going after that one. Oh, ever since then though, she's kind of dropped off the face of the planet, which is kind of weird, really. Because you kind of think after being in that,
kind of like Corey Yoon.
a little bit, yeah. It's almost a weird way.
Sunset. They got their, they had their starring movie. They think it went very well. Obviously, they're ridden off into the sunset again. They're never to be seen again. That's what's happened.
That's it, pure and done.
Yeah.
Also, to kind of corner off the trifecta of big stars here, we've got Bloody Holly Valance, which is probably the most famous out of the lot in terms of what some people recognize. There's a weird thing. Holly Valance is probably better known in Australia and the UK because we watch a lot of soap operas, and in England we watch a lot of Australian soaps, right?
We do.
Because we've got Neighbours and Home and Away.
So we
know Holly Valance from Neighbours.
This could be further from Neighbours, could it?
Far from neighbours.
Oh, you've got Neighbours, and then you've got over here, plus another 4,000 miles. You've got bloody DOA.
I know Holly Valance, not because of Neighbours, because that wasn't my demographic. That wasn't my time, right? I mean, well, because, you know, look, we all know her from the song, right? We all know her from the one song, the one big hit that she actually pulled off, which is Kiss Kiss. I know her from that and the really saucy music video where there's like where light is covering her bits in just the right moment.
That is so your demographic, Johan.
Honestly, it's funny because I remember this. I remember, first of all, ignore the slight cultural appropriation with the Bollywood music in the background of the track. The song still slaps, okay? Song still slaps.
Oh, mate, it slaps. It slaps hard.
One that always shocked me when I first saw this movie in episode, bloody Eric Roberts is in this movie.
Surprise casting, wasn't it, don't you think?
In many ways, because when you think full-blown martial arts movie, you don't think Eric Roberts. I bet you at this point in time in his career, he was kind of maybe a little bit lower down and thinking, well, I'll do anything. And plus, martial arts, I get to spend all this time in China. Well done. So... Superb. There is one other person. There is one person I do also want to throw into there as well. The person who plays Hayabusa, who is Kane Kasugi, who is a full-blown, well-renowned super martial arts sportsman who is so good in this movie in a weird way. So he is basically he has won so many competitions. As in, he is probably the only person out of the entire list who is genuinely, if you walked with him down the street, he will kick everyone's butt, you and around you, just by looking at you.
This was Kasumi's friend, right? Not her brother we're talking about.
Yeah, the friend, not the brother.
I completely agree. Yeah, he would absolutely tear you to pieces. Tear you to shreds. You wouldn't mess with him.
Yeah, 100%, right? And so, yeah, so there is a wide, very peculiar range of characters here. Another thing to mention, and this is sort of, well, I think, how the ball got rolling, is the producer for this film. Do you know who one of the producers for this movie is?
Looks at box of film. No, I don't know. Tell me.
Another person very famous for video game adaptation, Paul W.S. Anderson.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay.
So, in other words, Mortal Kombat and Resident Evil.
Yeah.
He is the producer for this movie, which kind of makes sense.
It's kind of, it's all coming together now.
Yeah.
This film is almost like an exact sort of love child of those two movie franchises.
1,000%, right? Now.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Yeah, that's...
Now you're sitting there going, oh, okay, this now kind of makes a little bit more sense. Right. Now, they were trying to find a director for quite some time. And because there's already a kind of a little working relationship with a few of the people because of the Transporter movie, which there's a few linking people there.
Yeah.
They brought Corey Yoon into it.
Yeah.
Now, what's fascinating is, and this you can kind of tell from most of how the writing is and how most of it is, not a lot of people have generally played the game before signing up for their roles, which...
no, they had not, no.
Although then again, though, let's talk about this quickly. Dead or Alive, have you played it? Have you played the series? What do you think of it?
I've played probably a little bit around Friend's House, but it's never been a series that I've ever got into. I was a fan of fighting games, but Tekken was always my thing. I was always a big Tekken fan. So Dead or Alive didn't really ever touch it. There was obviously a moment there in my teen years where I was playing the volleyball the volleyball one.
Yes.
The name of it, it's probably just Dead or Alive Volleyball, let's be honest. But yeah, other than that, not really a great amount of experience. That's why I said at the very start of it, I'm so pleased you picked a video game IP that I've got very little experience with. But in hindsight, it doesn't really matter.
Now, Corey Yoon, when he was signed up for it, he only knew that it was a video game. It was based on a fighting video game.
Yeah.
That's all he really knew.
Yeah.
He was then given to it, he was browsed for it, etc. Now, what's interesting is, and this is how I believe it was pitched to most of the women in this movie, right?
Okay.
This movie is in a weird way, a lot of people see Dead or Alive as this cheesecake, tits and boobs, butts, the whole thing, right? Corey Yoon didn't sell it as that, right? And I can, in a weird way, I can see this, right? It's very, it's very early noughties idea of feminism. But it is the idea that he sold this film as a female empowerment movie, where, I'm not joking, he sold it as this.
No fucking way.
Yeah. Because, think about it, all the lead characters are female.
Yes.
All the lead characters are female, they all kick butt, none of them need a man to get themselves sorted out, and at the end of the day, all five of them become what's considered to be something as the powerhouse. They become the Spice Girls, almost, of Kung Fu. And there was going to be ideas of turning this into a franchise, bigger down the line, with empowering strong women doing their thing.
Yeah,
right?
but even for empowering women for the noughties, that still includes heavily sexualizing them. I mean, even the lady who plays Kasumi, you know, like just a Japanese sort of warrior princess.
Yes.
She's wearing a bikini. Goodness knows how many times in this movie.
But this is my problem. Is it? Now, here's my thing. Is it? And I think this is where I think the things start to clash. And this is where I think Paul W.S. Anderson comes in and a few other people come in. I bet you Corey Yoon had an original idea and one saying, no, it's not about the boobs and the butts. It's about this, right? The producers come in and say, wait a minute, you need to talk. You are talking about Dead or Alive, right? It's famous for the boobs and the butts. So you have to do more boobs and butt shots. But I can imagine there's been conversations with Corey Yoon saying, no, it's all about the fighting and empowering women, women kicking butt, right?
Yeah.
But the producers saying, no, it's also about boobs and butts.
Sex sells.
Sex sells. Put some more boobs and butts in their place, right? To the point that this is the thing that I found fascinating, right? All the women, all the lead women, so like the five or six lead characters, they were all trained for martial arts for a good 5 months. 5 months of martial arts training so they could do the majority of the fights and stunts, right?
I mean, what I will say is that that's quite good. They obviously put an awful lot of time into training those 5 months. However, this movie only took them 3 months to make.
They did.
In total, which makes me think that obviously they did want to make it, put an awful lot of emphasis and make it like a genuinely good fighting movie. Again, like they had the intention of making it like a genuinely brilliant kung fu movie, but unfortunately producers get in the way of that.
Yep. You also got, for example, fight scenes. This is very much almost in the same realm as something like what Jackie Chan would do when it comes to Hong Kong fighting movies or kung fu films, right? That it would take a very long time to do fight scenes. For example, a lot of the fight scenes weren't like shot in a day. No, they were choreographed with most of them. Like I said, there are some people who they're clearly body doubles, which I will get to in a moment, especially Eric Roberts. You did not do half of those stunts. But that's the thing is, all most of the women did that, but that means all the fight scenes, in order to shoot them, they weren't shot in a day. They were choreographed months in advance and they were done within, like, each fight scene would take a week to shoot, right? Yeah. So they took a long time for the fight. In fact, one fight scene, especially we'll talk about the one in the rain, took 2 weeks to shoot.
Is this one between Christine and Helena?
Yes.
Ah.
That one took 2 weeks to shoot. But this is the thing. Now, you're not sure whether it is supposed to be because they were not that good at it, or maybe because the fight scenes were longer, which I will talk about in a moment, or the director was just meticulous in how the fight needs to go.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a weird conflict with that because, oh boy, there was quite a few problems on set.
I'm familiar with a few of the issues they faced on set, but
so here's an example. Right, first of all, the movie's budget was 30 million, so keep that in mind. But what continues on, because Corey Yoon insisted instead of shooting it in the United States or in Australia, which would have benefited quite a few people, they decided to shoot the entire thing in China. Yeah. Right?
And different parts of China.
Yeah, all over the world, right? Yeah. In fact, this was considered one of the first ever Western productions to be shot in China's Hedigan World Studios. This is the same place that shot Heroes and House of Flying Daggers, right?
Correct.
So this is big stuff. This is the first ever Western production to follow the same realm as what is called the Chinese waifu wushu kind of epic feel, which makes sense in terms of how the movie is directed.
Yeah.
In the fight scenes in particular. It's very waifu, wushu, kind of wire training, very much Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
I was about to say, there's an awful lot of Crouching Tiger in this. There's a lot of that.
It's that kind of feel. So if anyone's ever seen those movies from Hong Kong or China with that kind of fighting style, you're surprisingly going to be quite comfortable with this.
Yeah.
It's just done as well because
the issues that they would have faced into, I mean, first of all is communication, because on set you've got English, you've got Mandarin, you've got Hindi, you've got all the different regional dialects of whatever part of China you're in that week.
Yeah.
Not to mention the humidity of filming in those parts of the world as well.
So basically this is the thing. There was a humongous communication issue where there was only on set, on the actual production day, there were only about three or four people who actually spoke English. Everyone else spoke Chinese, which, including the director. The director doesn't speak a word of English. Nope. So everything had to be retranslated back to back to director and vice versa. So it was hampered by, for example, this is what he said, and I quote, Jamie Presley, again, brilliantly in-depth interview she does here. She basically calls Corey Yen one of the number one action martial art directors in the world. So she already knew this is a big thing. But said the experience was hampered by language barriers between the cast and crew. And the script kept deviating from the original script and from the game series storyline a lot, which annoyed the cast because there were rewrites as it kind of went along. And I'm assuming some of that is from the director and the other half's from the producers, which are again constantly fighting to figure out what this movie is supposed to be. A lot of bad stuff came up and happened, and it didn't turn out the way it should have because there were constantly weird communication and bickering between the director and ourselves.
Oh God!
So the director would say something.
Yeah.
Someone would have to go and translate it to the English crew.
Yeah.
The English crew would say, no. Can you please tell? It's like, can we do this instead?
Yeah.
Right? They would go to the associate person, whether it's the DOP or whatever it is, go and say that, translate in the Chinese, and then either be dismissed or go back and say, no, you kind of have to do this. There's no way to have either come up with a compromise or an understanding of what the material was because you couldn't when you have the majority of the movie being Chinese.
Jesus.
Wow.
Oh, man, it's so much fun. It's so much fun.
You can imagine how great this would be, sitting there going like, oh, boy. The main people who were basically, and this is also the other thing, the main people were basically the director of photography for the second unit. Not the main photographer, not the main cameraman, the second unit, and the first assistant director. So this one poor sod had to be running back and forth,
translating everything
to everyone.
Just think how much better this movie could have been then if they just said, let's make it exclusive Chinese or exclusively American.
Yeah. Now, and that's the thing is, the idea that Corey thought this, saw him up and said, like, the reason why we're going Chinese is because if you look at the characters, maybe mostly from aesthetic,
right?
A lot of them are Asian. A lot of them are Chinese, Japanese, Vietnamese. A lot of them fall under that category, okay?
Correct.
It's like, sure, this makes sense. Might as well make it sort of like a Chinese wushu kung fu flick. It actually kind of fits. But obviously, again, producers are saying, well, this is a combination, basically what it is. It's an American, British, Australian, German, Chinese production. So it's not one country. There's four other countries involved who are pitching in some shape or another to fund this movie.
Too many hands getting involved.
Way too many people touching and molding this nonsense, and
twisting things. Oh no! Oh, it's just the worst. It's the kind of stuff that makes you just cringe when you listen to it. Which during like production, it's like, oh God, it was doomed to fail from the word go.
However, some people did say that some of the experiences with this movie was actually, other than the sort of messy communication error, the humidity and all that kind of stuff, a lot of people generally had a good time on set. For example, just to sort of clarify, the Priestley praised the hard work of the director and the crew. Do you know how many hours a day did they actually work, the Chinese crew?
It was something like 20 hours a day, right?
It was. So basically, here we go. So basically, the crew and both units of the crew worked for 17-hour days, slept for only 4 hours sleep, and then got back and did it again. And so so that's the thing is, they praise the work ethic of the crew.
Oh, we're not taking that away. Oh, no, believe me. We believe, they put a lot of time and effort into it. I understand that. But unfortunately, it's about quality and not quantity.
And here's the other thing as well. I'm going to run with this, right? Imagine this shoot went on for about 3 months, right? Imagine this was your sleeping pattern for 3 months. Oh, my God, you'd be grouchy, done, tired. There's nothing. that you could just go and refresh yourself. There was no means of that.
You probably wouldn't know how to end your movie. Oh, and lo and behold, they didn't know how to end their fucking movie either.
Oh, they did not.
That's like three endings. It basically has three fucking endings.
In terms of its release, and here's the interesting thing about it, is that the movie came out first in September 2006, so not too far from its real thing. And its launch was in the UK first, Australia, and then the Philippines. That was a testing ground for this movie. This is where the movie generally actually had a theater release.
This had a theater release.
Yes, it did.
This was in movie theaters.
It was.
God, how many refunds do you think were requested?
One of our fantastic Instagram buddies and followers, Ben, who goes under the name of Rider Rated 18, right? Now, right. He big fan of ours. He basically said this, and I quote, because when I posted out saying, oh, we're doing this today, and he wrote down and said, I remember the poster being displayed all over the cinema. After that, there was nothing else. Well, that's because no one really saw this movie, but it's because it was only there for a very small window of time. It also never had a critics release, which in other words, this was not shown to critics.
No.
And in fact, Jamie Presley, she was very proud of her work on that, because she put a lot of work in the training and the fight scenes and everything. And you can see that she did the majority of the fight scenes. She was proud of that movie. She only found out about the movie being released, not from anyone giving her the copy of the DVD or whatever. She found out that the film was released and was able to view it from an acquaintance from the show My Name Is Earl. So basically, from a friend of Jason Lee's.
What the hell is happening? That's how she found out.
Yep, because the movie then wasn't released into the United States until a year later, because the Weinstein Company, who was distributing the movie, which clearly was a bit like that, sat there saying, nah, some of this needs to be re-edited, some of this needs to be adjusted, some of this needs to be grounded across, right?
So did they?
They did.
Okay. And that's the copy that I'm holding in my hand now. That was the film that was edited even more?
Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
There was at least another 15 more minutes of footage, and most of it were fight scenes and an entire subplot, which actually makes the ending of this movie make a little more sense.
Okay, and what was that little bit of subplot that was thrown in?
That little subplot is the idea, something known as the Five Sisters. Now, the Five Sisters subplot is apparently. You know, Shinobi Ninja, which we have to talk about when we get there, when we finally get to the movie.
Yeah.
The idea that the Shinobi Ninjas have a move called the Five Sisters.
And there is
a weird reoccurring plot, which we'll get to, about acupuncture and the idea of nerve holds, right?
Oh, okay. So, right, yeah. Okay.
Which now, there's a whole subplot which is about the Five Sisters, where separately they don't work alone, but if you put them together, you create a super fist punch where if you hit on a nerve hold, you knock a person out. All right.
Okay.
This explains some of the nonsense that happens in the ending, but also it explains the Five Sister bit, which explains the ending, because what's the very last scene of the movie is five women with swords. All five women standing in a row holding katana swords ready to go through. So that, for some reason, that was completely removed. More shots of boobs and butts were inserted in.
Of course.
Than what was in the original cut.
If there's one thing you need more of, that'd be it.
Boobs and butts. And there were some scenes that were removed because it was just bad tasting humor. Because I actually, on the DVD, there are some of these deleted scenes. Not all of them, but there are definitely a few. Some of them are just bad tasting. Like it just doesn't, that is aged like milk, some of the humor. But
can I just say one thing, just very, very quickly then? Can I just say bravo to you for actually braving the deleted scenes of this movie? Because I watched the final cut and everything, and I thought that was terrible. I would never even dream of looking further into this hellhole. So bravo, good sir, bravo. He does it. He does this for us, so we don't have to.
Thank you.
let's do my favorite thing, which is the critical response. I love these because it just kind of basically shows I like hearing what the critics have to say. So first of all, in the box office, right, overall, this movie did famously terribly, right? Yeah. Now, in moviedom, in order for you to consider making a profit, you have to technically make double the original budget.
Yes.
Right? So
60 million.
Yeah, so in other words, in order to consider this movie a profit, it needs 60 million.
Yeah.
This movie only made worldwide $7.7 million. So not only didn't even reach its budget,
no.
It is very low on the budget scale. It did not do well.
It lost so much money.
So much money. Only 1 million of that is only in just the UK and Australia. Okay. So basically more people in Australia and the UK have seen this movie, which makes sense to me because I'm getting the weird feeling that it was horribly, because it took almost a year before it got to the States. And then the reception of how it was like all over the world was
wouldn't
done.
Wouldn't have got there by then.
It was properly, and Mike, it was properly buried when it tried to go into, when it tried to get some press screenings in the United States.
Yeah.
And just was just dropped and forgotten about to the point that in America, it only made a staggeringly bad $260,000 in its opening weekend. It was released in...
Wow. Oh, my God.
It was released in 505 theaters. It spent a month on screenings, and then it only made altogether $480,000. It
was failed. Yeah, it already failed by the time it even got to the States.
Now, overall, we're looking at the reviews. The reviews have been generally negative. On Rotten Tomatoes at the moment of this time, it's around 33%, about 46 reviews, on an average of 4.7 out of 10. Which, believe me, we've reviewed worse movie scores on this show.
Oh, I know. I've no doubt about that.
Right. However, there are some people that are actually giving it favorable reviews. Someone from the LA Weekly actually said that it is one of the year's purest entertainment films. It is nonstop fighting, mostly with very little clothes on, and with flair that you expect from a martial choreographer like Yoon. It is as a baseline, it is awesome. If you only ever want to see one bad movie about warrior chicks who meet up on a tropical island to fight in a contest, DOA it is.
I mean, if that's the specific niche that you're looking for, is a very, very specific niche, then this movie is everything that you could ever possibly want.
When I think of Dead or Alive, I don't think of a storyline or characters, really. I think in terms of like personalities, I see them as being caricatures with a surprisingly decent fighting mechanic, but nothing I would sit there and go, yeah, there is depth and lore and anything else into this fighting franchise. It's not like Street Fighter, where apparently there's so much lore is ridiculous, or the granddaddy of fighting story lore, which is Tekken, which is just the ultimate soap opera melodramatic cheese, right?
Yeah, but Tekken's bonkers though as well.
Yeah, Tekken is pure bonkers.
But it
takes all its lore as all, some of its lore is not canon, but then there's lore that is canon, and that canon lore is so serious. It's so serious.
It's so serious. When you're a bit annoyed with your dad, chuck him in a volcano. That'll sort him out right.
And then it turns out, no, you didn't actually chuck me really into a volcano.
He chucks you into the volcano.
And it just... But
let's dig up our demigod great granddaddy and let him chuck us both into a volcano before we strap him in a rocket and shoot him up into space. Oh, gee, why are we not talking about Tekken? That's gonna be another one. You've got to bring me back on for any Tekken movies.
There is a Tekken movie. There is a live action Tekken movie. So we might do that next.
That's gonna be one. That's definitely gonna be one.
Okay. So that is basically the backstory to Dead or Alive, which to me, like I said, I find fascinating. It's an idea of a director trying to do one thing, the actors and actresses trying to do something else, the producers wanting to do something else, the communication barrier that stopped this from happening, doing a drastic edit to make it short, sweet, and simple, and then just left to die. And this is sadly one of the video game movies that not a lot of people remember because it was literally dead on arrival.
Yeah, and I'll keep coming back to that. I'll keep saying that. I did see another, like, obviously there's a few different box arts for this. Another one of the box arts says that it's one of the best movie adaptations of a video game ever. And wait, is that a compliment? I mean, is that really a compliment when you think about what other video game movies were made up until 2006?
Now, here's the thing. I got the quote. Do you know who said this?
Who said it?
Kim Newman, the famous.
Oh, well, there you go.
Right. So Kim Newman said this. Kim Newman's actually said, this is the best film yet adapted from a computer game. It doesn't even try to add depth and simply delivers what the fans expect. Plenty of ninja babes with as few trimmings as possible.
That's basically what you get.
That's what you get.
What you see is what you get. I'm sorry, was you expecting in-depth character arcs and lore? You don't come here for lore. Nobody plays Dead or Alive for its lore. Who do you think we are, Tekken?
And this is the thing. I feel like people are, this is where I might slightly defend this movie. You don't look at that cover. You don't look at this video game franchise and expect Shakespeare. You don't expect that. This is, understandably, almost in a weird way, knowing it is just cheesecake. It knows it is just downright just sexy ninja babes fighting each other out in bikinis. This is literally what the games are to a point.
Yeah, that's all the games wants to be. If you want to give it lore, leave that to the fan fiction. Let the fans decide on that shit. Yeah. But that was never the point of DOA. Now, even I'm calling it DOA now. I guess with what we ended up with would be almost like the perfect compromise.
And yet it's not. And so with
surprise, it doesn't even get that right.
Pay-per-view patient, order now through CENTCOM Cable Television. Phone 552-2288.
Right. First of all, we need to start off right at the very, very beginning. So we need to start off with the whole introduction to our lead three, right?
Yes.
First of all,
okay.
Princess Kasumi.
With the worst CGI of an army I've ever seen.
That is pretty bad. Gonna admit. That is really weird green screen fodder.
It was the worst. I just thought it was flags, and then the flags moved and went, oh no, there are people there. Okay.
So this is the thing. So you're introduced by flying through the sky and into a giant temple. A giant ninja temple. Now here's the thing. There is this big giant Japanese castle in the sky on top of a mountain, right?
Of course.
Now here's the thing.
Where else are you going to put them? On the ground? But here's on the ground level?
And here's the weirder thing as well. It's like, you start this with no context. You don't know who you're meeting. You don't know what's going to happen. You're suddenly thrown into this. And again, looking at the cover and the box art and everything else, you weren't expecting this. And I feel this is the perfect tone setter because you're suddenly rushed into this. You got Princess... So you basically end up with Princess Kasumi, and she is stoic and cold and tired. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I need
merciless.
To... Literally, it's so flat. It is, I need to go and find my brother. He disappeared after going to a tournament and never returned.
Princess Kasumi, your brother is dead. Your destiny is to lead your people.
I will not believe he is dead until I see his body.
There is no body.
Then he is not dead. I am going to find him.
The guards won't let you leave.
I am not a cricket in a box. I alone determine my destiny.
But Princess, as your brother's best friend, you must let me help you.
If my brother is really dead, then you are no longer his best friend.
Princess Kasumi, if you leave, you suffer the same fate as your brother. You will become an outcast. A shinobi.
So be it.
Decides to go and say, fudge it. Just goes. And so when this happens, we're then introduced to Natasha's character, who is...
Hang on. Whoa. Hang on. Are you about to jump onto Tina next?
No. We're not jumping to Tina. We're on to Natasha's character, who is the purple-haired half sister of Kasumi.
Yes. But also, I don't know. Now, I feel free to cut this, but also, wasn't she played by an American actress? I mean, we're in a high temple in the middle of Japan, and it's just full of American actors.
This explains. Let me explain. Right, this is why for some people they're considered half brothers or half sisters, because I feel that's okay. The best way to sort of sum it up. Natasha, who plays that, she's actually, out of all the things, she's from Norway. So,
she's okay. Norwegian. Right. Just add another nationality into it. Why don't we?
So she's Norwegian. So, So basically, she is sort of the protector of the clan. The main, she's like head ninja of the clan, apparently, right? And she goes over and says, like, Kasumi, if you leave, I will have free authority to kill you. And this is where you're suddenly introduced to the waifu nonsense, which you do not expect in a movie called Dead or Alive. So she flips a sword into the wall. She bounces.
So good.
She bounces.
So good.
She bounces off all of the guards. Jumps off. This bit is the best. She jumps.
It is.
Do you want to say? So the moment she jumps off the sword.
So she jumps off. She basically looks like she's about 200,000 feet in the air. I don't know. Like, because there's just a blue abyss below her. And then whilst free falling.
Yeah.
It makes me think, has she been wearing this wingsuit this entire time? It's like, oh, it just happens to be a wingsuit. It's fine. I mean, I'm just some sort of like traditional Japanese princess, but I'm wearing a flying suit. And while she's ascending, flying through the sky, of course, she is the first one to get what I've called the digital homing shuriken or invite to DOA.
I think it's nonsense, pure nonsense. It's a shuriken that knows exactly where you are, where to hit, so it doesn't hurt you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and invite you to DOA. So that is all within the first 3 minutes. And because it's all in the first 3 minutes, if you know if you're going to like this movie or not in any shape or form by watching the first 3 minutes. If you know that you are ready to tolerate this moon logic, silly, ridiculous, melodramatic, whatever this is,
you know you're
going to enjoy the rest, because the next thing is then we are introduced to Tina Armstrong, played by Jamie Presley. So
yes,
now do you want to have a talk about Tina Armstrong a little bit? What is the scene that we're about to get into?
Okay, so this is the scene where she's gone for a swim. Obviously, the first thing you see of her is the chest. Of course, it's the chest.
Yes.
Followed by the butt. And she's wearing, just in case you don't know, she's American because she's wearing the US flag on her bikini.
Hell yeah.
She then proceeds to, you get your sort of, like, your first sort of glimpse into the wonderful sound effects used in this movie by when she puts her legs into the braces so she can start doing some push-ups.
Yes.
It's like a really wonderful, like, eek. Like to lock her feet in place before she's stopped by her butler. What proceeds is a phone call from her dad, played by the wonderful Big Daddy himself, Kevin Nash, which is, I'm sold.
This one made me laugh because you didn't know about Kevin Nash being in this movie. And the moment I saw you writing on Twitter, so the moment Kevin Nash, wait a minute. Kevin Nash is in
Hold the phone.
Hold the phone. Like, the thing is, you weren't sold on this even before then. And then you're sitting there going, whoa, wait a minute. Kevin Nash is in this.
We got Diesel, baby.
He's in this. And okay, all right. I think I'm sold.
Hi, Dad. What's up?
Sweetheart, I just hope you know what you're giving up.
Dad, we already talked about this.
But if you get the afternoon flight, you could still make it to the tag team championship in Des Moines.
Dad, I already told you, I am done wrestling. I'm done being fake. I'm done.
Sweetheart? Are you there?
Hey, Dad, I'm gonna have to call you back in a minute, okay?
Miss Armstrong? Miss Armstrong?
Wait a minute, Sasha!
Here's the deal, lady. We want the yacht. If you do exactly as we say,
you live. If you don't, then you'll pay with excruciating...
New deal, boys. You boys get off my yacht now, and y'all will avoid excruciating pain.
I agree with you when you say that, Jane Presley, actually is probably one of the more, probably gives one of the better performances.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably one of the worst fight scenes that she then takes part in, because she gets hijacked by pirates.
Yes.
Yeah. By terrible, terrible pirates, and has the worst fight. However,
yeah,
the best part of that fight is where the guy gets back up, all of his friends are in the water, and she says, yeah, do you just want to? And he goes, okay. And just yeets himself off that boat.
It's kind of special. It's wonderful, that scene. This fight scene isn't the best, but I would also argue it's because they're doing it also on a boat, which automatically isn't the rumors. But I will say one thing about this. There is a very special cameo in this movie. One of the pirates is a very special cameo from another video game movie. Do you recognize who that is?
No, not a clue. Not even a clue.
Head pirate plays Liu Kang in the Mortal Kombat movie.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I have seen that movie, but it's been a long time. I never would have recognized that without you telling me.
So he's going to go, oh my God, Liu Kang's in this, and gets instantly kicked the butt out of. Oh my God.
Yeah, big time.
And then once again, conveniently, the pirates are beaten up. The shuriken arrives and goes like, oh, okay, DOA. All right. We then get introduced to Christy, who is played by Holly Valance. Now, the first time we're introduced to her, she's literally coming out of the shower. She's in Hong Kong.
I mean, start how you mean to go on, really.
Yeah, she's coming out of the shower, and she's interrupted by the Hong Kong police, as it were, which are all in the Hong Kong bedroom saying, like, hey, you know, we know you're doing stuff. We know you're robbing stuff. Blah, blah, blah. Can you stop doing robbery things?
Can you stop being baddies, please?
Yes. And thing is, she's just gone out of the shower. She's wearing a towel, blah, blah, blah. You know, the whole shebang, right?
You'll have to speak up. I'm wearing a towel.
Which she does. She does speak up. She does have to speak up a bit because she's wearing a towel.
She's wearing a towel. best line ever.
Tell me about the diamonds.
Well, they're a girl's best friend, made from carbon, subjected to high pressure, traditionally a 60th wedding anniversary gift, and they're forever.
Well, perhaps spending a few hours in a cold cell under some hot lights will make you a little more agreeable.
Could I at least get dressed first?
Be my guest.
Would you hand me my bra, please? Do me up.
Best shot in the whole entire movie, by the way.
Yes.
I mean, you see side boob after side boob with the best towel whipping animations.
So good.
Also, some of the amazing sound effects. You know, where she knocks the first guy down, then she just sort of like throws her leg over her back to like sort of like knock him down. There's like a really nice sound effect when she does that.
There's a good.
The best scene has got to be bra and gun in the air, falling down. The bra goes on, the gun comes out. Will you do me up? Thank you. Badass.
This is by far the most memorable scene in the whole movie. When people think of Dead or Alive, you literally think of this scene. And the sad thing is, this is in the first 10 minutes. So imagine that. You've peaked almost at this point.
You've peaked at 10 minutes.
It's really, oddly enough, this whole scene is surprisingly really good. It is cool. It is. And in a weird way, again, it's sexy, but also in a fun way, she's the boss. She's powerful. Female empowerment in a weird, but in a male
sexy way, still.
In a male gaze kind of way, but
for a male audience.
Yeah. And then what happens is I love the bit afterwards. She escapes. She goes into a lift. She's sort of still kind of just wearing bra and panties. She walks into the lift. She sees a guy in a full suit and goes, how you doing? Suddenly, you cut. She's wearing a trench coat and a hat. And the guy
she's got
is
full Hitman 47 on his ass.
She did! Because then by that point, the guy in the lift is literally stuffed into his suitcase.
Suitcase? What?
Brilliant! Absolutely brilliant.
I mean, I was drinking at the time, and I spat out drink because what?
Personally, I just loved that. I laughed when I saw that again. It was great. And then she escapes. She drives onto a motorcycle, and then she gets a shuriken again.
Not before you see the boat hit the seat of the bike for whatever reason.
Perfectly. But then also in the background, you're introduced to a new character that is just done for this movie, which is Max. Max is introduced in the background, and then we find out more about him later.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to the world's greatest martial arts tournament, DOA.
I'm Helena Douglas, and I want to thank you for accepting our invitation. Each of you has been individually selected because you represent the best fighting style in your specialized field. Soon, you will get a chance to prove that you're the best fighter in the world, and at the same time, pick up a $10 million prize. In the meantime, relax before the real fun begins.
You're suddenly, I think this is literally the case, you're suddenly then thrown into the plane, I believe it is.
Yes, straight after that, yeah. You're on the plane scene, yeah.
Yeah, where we're introduced to all the slight arrangement of characters. Some of them are recognisable, some of them are not, but they're all sort of there, right?
Kevin Nash is there, most recognisable for
me. Kevin Nash is there, other characters are in there, sort of Hayabusa. Zach's in there, who is, we'll talk about Zach in a minute.
Top of the dick list.
You have Hayabusa, you've got other characters which are only there by name, and it's a bit of a shame because some of the deleted scenes were some of their fight scenes. There's a weird deleted scene with this where Kevin Nash and Jamie Presley are having a beer drinking contest on the plane.
Okay, all right. Sounds about right, yeah.
Just randomly this happens somewhere before we're introduced to Zach. And there's a beer drinking contest. They drink it. Tina wins and does the biggest belch. And then Kevin Nash gets angry and breaks a table by accident.
Why did they delete that? After we've recorded this podcast, I'm going back and I'm watching that scene. I bet that's brilliant. That's exactly what I want to see.
It's funny. It's that kind of weird slapstick humor. But this is a kind of but it's a slapstick humor that if you've seen Chinese wushu kung fu films, this is very prevalent in that. We then introduced would I call him one of the antagonists?
Yeah, I would argue that he is. Yeah, he's certainly not there to help push their story forward, is he? He's getting in the way of anything. So,
yep, and that would be Zach. Now, interesting factoid about
this: worst.
He's terrible. Here's an interesting factoid about this: he does have the weirdest haircut, which is part of the game. So he has a weird haircut. Some of it is a genuine headpiece, so it's like bald with a little bit of that, and some of it is actually CGI. Because he moves so quickly sometimes that they couldn't actually properly put the thing on. So sometimes the hair is CGI and some of it a real headpiece.
What the hell is going on? But then again, I shouldn't sound surprised with half the stuff that goes on in this movie. That's like nothing in comparison to some.
Right. So throughout the movie, and this is the thing, he is sort of an antagonist to Tina, right? Because he is constantly just being a bit of a sex pest. Like,
oh, yeah.
Not a little, no, like genuinely a sex pest.
He's like I say, he's top of the dick list.
Yeah.
He never moves.
For certain characters, they have mini rivalries in this movie for some reason, because it adds more tension, I guess? I don't know.
Maybe.
This is so embarrassing, Dad. I cannot believe you're here.
What? I got an invitation just like you.
Tina Armstrong. Baby. So how come you're here? And that lady just said, the best in your fighting style. If I recall, you're a wrestler. Wrestling ain't really fighting now, is it?
Norm Tanner's beneath you.
I sure would like to be.
Dad.
Whatever.
God, I cannot wait to kick his ass.
So they all land. Well, they don't all land, because they introduce to Helena on the thing. Like, hey, welcome to the DOA tournament. We're about to get to the island. You all need to jump off this plane.
Go, go, go.
Basically, okay, question. Here's the thing, right? Did this movie predict Fortnite?
Oh my god!
You have to get to a certain point.
Fucking Twilight Zone. Oh my god! You come up with something here.
I'm just imagining that you're jump out of a plane and you need to be in the third place before the end of the night. Yeah. Blah blah blah.
Because you know, I mean, it's midday at this point on the plane. Like, the sun is at the highest peak of it in the sky, and for some reason we've got the fastest moving fucking sun that's closing down to midnight. For some reason, it's like evening by the time it's like you've been skydiving. Like, your plane's to the ground in about 5 minutes.
Yes.
The sun does not move that fast. But anyway, that's...
Yeah.
Don't get me started.
So everyone jumps out. Everybody jumps out. Hayabusa actually goes and says... Because Hayabusa's actually in this, because he too was, oddly enough, invited to the tournament. Very convenient. And we'll find out later why it's all convenient.
Maybe Kasumi's had a plus one.
I love his, like, oh, bring another. Ooh, can I bring my buddy, please? Can I bring my buddy into a deathmatch tournament, please? Of course. So,
only if he has his own flying suit.
Of course, which everyone does. And then the three leads get, for some reason, everyone else is fine, right?
Yeah.
The three leads get picked up by the wind and are taken off course.
the wind doesn't affect anybody else.
No one else. Everyone else arrives perfectly fine. This one, though, the three are protagonists seem to go again, because again, I'm seeing where the plot's supposed to be going here, because they end up landing on a beach. And on the beach, they end up seeing this giant Buddha temple. Now, unfortunately, they were supposed to be at the top of the Buddha temple, not at the bottom.
How in hell are we supposed to get up there?
We'd better get going.
Well, you're both on your own. I don't do teams.
That's fine with me. Any team you're part of is bound to lose anyway.
Well, I'll remember that when I'm collecting the 10 million. Okay, here goes. Race, yes, yes.
In a weird way, it kind of feels like the reset button, because they try and do the race, they try and do it on their own, and they realize the sun is setting really extra quickly this time around. I don't know where they are. Really fast. You get cut to another shot where the sun is going extra fast. And it's either
just taking some speed,
which makes me think either the sun's really fast or the wushu is just sort of the wushu is actually, do you know when it's in slow motion, it's actually like it's really slow, it's genuinely slow. And so they all agree, like, look, if we want to get to the top and we all want to be in this tournament, we all have to work together. And this is what I'm saying, where I understand what the whole thing is about, female empowerment. I get it, this is supposed to be a female empowerment movie in some way or another. The girls, you know, sisters are doing it for themselves, that kind of thing. They all
That's
work together.
Of, yeah, attitude.
Yeah, and so they work together. They do some really cool bits
with
this.
But they don't work together, because the whole point is, right, they're about halfway up and they all agree. They all sort of concede and go, okay, I think we need to help each other out.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think, is it, I can't forget. Is it Tina who goes up first?
No, it's, I think Christy goes up first. Yes.
Yeah. Then she helps. Then Kasumi throws Tina. Then Christy catches her.
Yeah.
But then Kasumi can just jump the distance anyway.
Because we've seen her do this.
But if she's clearly got to a point where she's conceding, like, okay, I need your help. No, you don't, dickhead. You just made the jump by yourself.
Out of the other three characters there, we already know that Kasumi is a ninja. So we know she's a ninja princess, by the way, just to make that clear. So
Shinobi
ninja princess. So she's literally has the power of wushu. So she can literally jump back and do ridiculous stuff. But this is where you see a tiny glimpse that the purple-haired assassin, she is on the island too, and she's ready to fight. But it's only a glimpse.
This is Donovan to all combatants. Welcome to DOA. Fights can happen anytime, any place, against anyone. I select matchups based on computer analysis of the most competitive scenarios. The computer will broadcast your opponent's image to your ID bracelet. No weapons are allowed in the DOA fight, except the human weapon.
Get ready, fight!
To win, you must knock out your opponent. Losers will be sent home.
Proceedings are about to begin. And oh boy, when the proceedings begin, we are introduced to the floppiest haired Eric Roberts I think I've ever seen.
He's just the worst.
What is he doing in this movie?
He walks out and you go, oh, there you go, there's your main protagonist. Antagonist.
You know.
The second he walks out, you go, oh, there's the antagonist, of course.
There's the bad guy. This is the thing. The plot of this film, to the extent, is pretty much the plot to most of it. It's mostly the plot to Enter the Dragon, right? Very much so. Yeah. Island, you're on an island full of famous fighters. Fighters fight each other. So here's the thing. They explain the rules. And here's the thing that I feel slightly disappointed by, right? In a movie with a tournament going on, this bit is a montage, right? This bit's almost a whole montage, sort of explaining what it is. Also explains a little side plot that Helena Douglas is the daughter of Fame Douglas, who started the tournament in the first place. All right. And now that she's 21, legal age, everybody, basically it's like, because now everyone's of legal age. I think they had to establish, like, look, now she's 21. She can join the tournament and be in bikinis now. And that's absolutely fine.
Just have to establish she is 21. Okay.
She is of age. This is fine.
Fine.
Okay.
Back off.
Right. So, only one character that has a bit more gravitas, in air quotes, with the fighting scenes is Princess Kasumi, because Kasumi is constantly trying to find where her brother is.
Yeah.
And she doesn't shut the fuck up about it. Oh my goodness. I get it. We're trying to find your brother.
We get it. We know why you're here. You said it already. Goodness.
And here's the thing. One of my, like I said, a lot of the movie by this point onwards is a lot of fight scenes mixed with very randomly and poorly edited, jumps in time logic. Like the scenes from one scene, it cuts to another scene, for example, that clearly it doesn't match it's a time jump, but it doesn't logically flow. Like Holly Valance would be in one scene doing something else, then it instantly jumps to another scene of her in a different outfit doing a different conversation.
Yeah, this happened with Kasumi, I noticed, because it gives Kasumi's backstory when you find out about her brother and all that. And then it cuts to a scene where she's in a bath, like a sort of like a rose petal bath.
Yeah.
And Hayabusa's there, like, it's like, give me any privacy. And I thought we were still in the flashback scene. But the thing is, like, the film establishes very early on that they've got these really cheesy, mind you, they've got these fantastic transition shots with the DOA, and then move on to the next scene.
Yeah.
I mean, but they don't utilize them in the required way, because I thought we were still watching a previous scene. I was like, oh, no, the bath is current day. Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't explain a lot, I feel. And I think that's the problem. The editing is forensic, but I'm not sure whether it is because, again, it was sliced up a little bit in the American release, or whether it was, or where that's just like some of the, or that was just the style as it is. Because remember, this was the early noughties, and the early noughties was very much was still like, almost lingering off the whole MTV editing style.
It's so bad, but also equally, it's fucking slaps at times.
It
as
does
well.
Slap, look like.
Weight Watchers.
There are some subplots happening throughout the movie, and we're not going to go like, oh, it jumps back in this. We might as well go to each subplot. So first of all, we talk about Kasumi. Kasumi's constantly trying to find her brother. One of the things she knows, because Eric Roberts actually sat down and said, look, I know you're trying to find your brother. We haven't found the body yet. Eric, dude, we know you're lying. Dr. Donovan, I know you're lying, right?
Yeah.
So this, Dr. Donovan. Yeah. And it says like, but I know the man who killed him, Leon, right? Leon's also on the island. And so as a thing, so it's him. So basically you got Eric Roberts in this giant sort of fake like security wing or something with loads of fake screens on, and everyone's typing on like a weird looking Mac and Linux kind of computers and all that stuff.
It's so cliche.
And then you're introduced to a character that does happen later on called Weatherby, who always gets his name said wrongly because everyone is an idiot. He's the awkward nerd who came up with the nanobot technology.
He's us.
Well, he's supposed to be us in 2005, okay? Yes. So he is supposed to be the awkward teenager kind of feel, even though he's clearly like in his mid to late 20s. He's at least in his early 30s, and he's awkward as balls. My goodness.
Oh, fantastic.
Because Kasumi's just in her room, right? And she's having and she's actually having a fight already with Purple Haired Ninja, right? She's already in there. Yeah. And then suddenly, Leon kicks the door down.
Before I take your life, will you repent for leaving the clan?
My only goal is to find out what happened to my brother.
Leon!
Room service.
Yes!
Oh, there it is! There it is!
And then the fight kicks off properly, where she is completely beats, where they're demolishing the entire building almost. Yeah. She's going through bits and bobs, fighting through, like going through the bathroom, the kitchen, everything in her apartment. And then this cuts to a little bit where Max and Christy, who are both lovers, partners in crime and thieves, are making out on the bed. At one bit, she says, I believe the earth is moving. I love Max's response. Like, say, that's
what I go for.
That's what I go for. No, seriously, the earth is moving. And then Leon goes through the wall.
Yeah.
Through the wall. And then they has fight. So Leon and Kasumi is still brawling. It is genuinely a good fight scene. It's genuinely fun. And there's one shot that I will always remember from this movie. And I don't know whether you remember it, but I will say, right? So at this moment, Max and Christy are sort of hiding in the corner of the room with a blanket covering them because they're nude, right? They have been spooning. And and then Leon and Kasumi are beating each other up. Kasumi is properly giving a proper good on wailing on Leon and beating him senseless. At one point, almost throws him entirely through a kitchen table. And it cuts to one shot where Holly Valance is doing this, like, I am impressed look, where it's just her going, and I'm like,
bravo!
That, to me, is my look for the entire movie. It's more like, I am surprised. I am
surprised how much you're enjoying this.
Exactly. I'm surprised. Yeah. Like, I'm impressed.
Yes, I do remember the scene that in which you speak. Yes.
Why is that not a GIF? Because I could use that to explain.
I can make it a GIF. If you want it as a GIF, I'll make it as a GIF.
Please make it a GIF.
Use it forever. Okay.
Because I want that to be whenever I am just genuinely impressed with something, I surprisingly impressed. I want Holly Valance's face going, You then got the other plot line involving Christy and Max. So do you want to kind of explain to me what Christy and Max is doing with Helena in the first place?
What Christine about to do with Helena?
Yes.
My God, I can't even fucking remember.
This sums it up, doesn't it? That sums up the movie.
Do you think I paid attention to story in this?
Okay, so there is a weird subplot going on here.
Just remind me, yeah.
So, okay, so there's a subplot where Max is there. Max was not really invited to DOA. He tricked his way into it because he has heard that on this island there is a big vault of money, right?
Yes.
Because the cash prize for this is $10 million, right? But there's clearly more. So what Max wants to do is try and break into the vault and rob him. Christie says, I will help you do this, but on two conditions. One, half the money's mine, and if I do win the tournament, I still get the $10 million. You don't touch that, you slimy dog. But it's a weird kind of thing. They don't like each other, but they like each other. They're lovers, they're partners, but it's the worst, right?
Right.
There's a whole bunch of extra bits where we never get told this, but apparently, according to a source, which I'm not sure is part of the deleted scenes or whatever, Max says that Helena is the key to the vault, right?
Yeah.
So Max is constantly trying to be weird and pervy to Helena the entire movie, trying to go up and say, I'm just going to give you a little bit of a back rub. And the fact as well that Christie, in a weird way, is jealous of this.
Yeah.
So she's constantly cock blocking him whenever it gets too touchy.
This is true. Yeah, of course she's got the tattoo on her lower back, doesn't she?
Yes, and there's a bit where for some reason he takes out what looks like some kind of laser pen.
Like a laser read. Like, what is that supposed to be?
Do you do squats?
Sorry, just slipped out my hands. I'm playing volleyball. You want in?
Yeah, let's play.
If you must know, I was working.
Working it seemed a better description.
When Christie has another go at it, where they're just sort of chilling out in the spa together, because of course
they're in the spa.
He says, like, she says, oh, there is a second tattoo. There's a second tattoo that I found because I love the teaser. Like, I ain't telling you where it is. It's like, hey, girls share secret naughty things with each other. And so this then leads into the big fight with Christie and Helena in the rain. Now, this fight took 2 weeks to film, mostly because, one, constantly raining. So the idea was it was fake rain, but everyone was wet, even though we all know the reason why it was wet. Mm-hmm. See-through t-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also people were having trouble keeping balance because they were wet on a beach.
Yes, that's always going to be a problem.
So that's why, if you notice in the fight, there's some random moments where it just cuts to some, what seems like it's a very sort of like hero, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon shots, where it cuts to like close-ups of bamboo hitting the rain and the water, and loads of like really artsy shots in this fight. Loads of slow motion, loads of means to stretch out the fight to make it look like a fight.
Hey, baby, come on, loosen up. It's a party. Come on, you know you want to dance with me.
Well, see, I'd love to, but I don't know how good you're going to be on the dance floor with two broken legs.
So what, you just going to ruin this party for everybody?
Fine. Sunrise tomorrow morning.
Forbidden Square?
Fine.
Subplot number three is the Zach and Tina situation, where basically Zach's being an absolute perv, Tina keeps saying no, and then they decide, and then they has fight, and then he respects her for whooping his butt.
Yeah, and the thing is, though, like that's one bit that I understand, because it's the rules of the tournament are established very early on.
Yeah,
when they say that the only way to win is by knockout.
Yeah,
now, I know there's already an alternative to this where Kevin Nash and Tina, and I'll call him Kevin Nash till the day I die.
Yeah, yeah.
I know he's got a real character name. It's Kevin Nash. Kevin Nash and Tina have the fight. So whoever hits the water first is out. I understand that. But Zach wasn't knocked out. Zach just got knocked off of the sort of platform, and I've decided that you've won now.
I think this is supposed to equal the ring out situation. Like,
but she was already knocked out first.
It's so confusing. I'm not sure where the whole thing. I don't know. Basically, they look in this movie. Do you honestly expect they're going to try and follow the rules?
No,
of their
I
own
shouldn't
plot?
Use logic. I shouldn't be using logic. I do apologize. It's rule number one of the Trash Tapes.
Don't try and put too much logic into it. You'll hurt your head. So okay, so those are all the subplots. It all kind of merged together because by the end of it, it's only a very small handful of people. They got rid of the fluff by this point, right?
Yeah.
There's one bit we haven't mentioned. Well, there's one bit I mentioned, which is kind of funny, is where Max and Bayman are supposed to have a fight. Now, Max beats him entirely by accident, by accidentally throwing his shoes at him. And then Bayman gets knocked out by a statue in the apartment randomly. Yeah. And that's the thing. This is why, again, I am generally convinced that it's supposed to be a female empowerment movie to a point. I'm going to throw this at it because a lot of the men, other than, let's say, Hayabusa, lot of the men are either villainous or cowards, right?
Or horny,
which, yeah. But again, villainous or cowardly. And because the women get all the good fights, Max throws two shoes at someone and wins.
Wins.
The volleyball scene.
Yay!
Which is very, very obvious. It's supposed to be an homage to Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball, right?
Yeah.
It'd be dumb not to put it in there. It's part of the thing. And in fact, the ball's an actual replica from the game, by the way. And it's something that was made exclusively for the movie. And I'm not sure you can get it anywhere else ever again, unless there are some copies out there. So if you go on eBay, you find a Dead or Alive volleyball, that might be rare.
That might be a rare find, my friend.
So they do the very typical thing. So you have our four lead women, basically. Now Helena's kind of been brought in now to join the girl squad, which is basically what's happened. And they're all playing volleyball with hilarious editing, slow motion cuts, zoom in shots of everything, a wipe shot of someone's butt. Just clear on the screen.
Just as you go past it.
Yeah.
The camera is at butt level.
And it's just like, and they're taking, like, and the funny thing, every time they hit the volleyball, it sounds like an explosion or a bullet is smacking them.
There's even one like scene where it sounds like a train's going past.
Choo choo, mother trucker, and just smacks it, right?
Weatherby decides to introduce himself.
Yay!
And we actually get in his mind the love scene between him and Helena.
Oh my
and
god!
And all the love hearts are coming off the screen, and you get the music and everything, and like that is actually in the movie. That actually happened.
Yeah.
I'm Weatherby.
What are you doing?
I work in the lab. I'm Weatherby.
Oh, Helena.
I know. Would you like another drink? I'll get you another drink. I'll get you another drink.
Thanks, yeah. Wellington.
Actually, it's Weatherby. It's a pretty funny story. Shay, Shay. My grandfather came over with his horse.
Hey, Wallaby.
Yes.
What are you doing?
It is kind of amazing that that stayed in the movie.
I can't believe that that made the final cut.
And it is, I think it's supposed to emphasize that Weatherby is very cheeseball dorky.
Yeah,
but my god, was that a whiplash? Because nothing like this happens again.
He's even like, thank you, God. You see in this montage.
And what's brilliant is after that bit, he ends up trying to talk to Helena, and he is awkward as balls, doesn't know what to say,
so
doesn't do that, and then, you know, talking about his grandfather riding on a horse, really bizarre, and trying to take cocktails over to her, and they're kind of kicking it off. It cuts to another surprisingly decent fight later on, before we go to the volleyball scene again, another decent fight where Helena is fighting off, is literally fighting off an army of ninjas with swords, and I'm not gonna lie, that's pretty decent as well. It's pretty cool.
Is this the one on the steps?
Yes.
Are you talking about the sword fight where nobody dies?
Yes.
You think that's a good scene? Everyone's got katanas, and all of the dead ninjas who are on the floor. Oh no, ninjas! All the dead ninjas are on the floor. Are just going,
they're all knocked out. Fuck. I love it because there is a scene that's complete nonsense, right? And I love this. And a bit randomly, while she's sweeping off swords and fighting off, there's a bit where there's some really surprisingly decent moves in here. Like at one point, using her own sword, she blocks all the swords attacking her at once, like boom, and then there's one bit where she kicks a sword out of a person's hand, backflips, like kicks a sword into the air, they fight it off, and she grabs it with two swords, and you're thinking, this is really cool, I'm not gonna lie, this is nice. This is cool. It's dumb as bricks, but I love it.
If this scene had blood spatter and decapitations, then it would have made sense, and I would have said, bravo, good sir.
But it is a PG-13.
I don't care. Everyone was on the floor going, fuck. And come on, you've just been in a sword fight, for goodness sake.
Everyone had a graze.
What, this sword's made out of foam? Like, what is going on?
I love the idea that maybe just everyone had a graze. Everyone just got like, that stings. Weatherby tells Helena, first of all, that Eric Roberts, Dr. Donovan, was the one who killed her father, right?
Oh, we're all so surprised. Oh no,
shock horror. And then also, at the same time, is that he's using the nanotechnology to read all the information of all the fighters. Like, and there's a weird
thing. It's not four fighters.
Four fighters, and more, because there's some more ones there later hidden in the background. So they kidnap. So basically, at some point, through an elaborate sense of nonsense, they kidnap our leads, basically, and put them in a tube, right? Put them all in tubes. Eric Roberts comes out looking smug as balls, going like, aha, what I've been doing with the nanotechnology is I have been reading your move list, basically.
Like, it's actually called a move list as well, like it was in the game.
Yeah, it's basically, because I've mastered all your moves, right? Yeah. So to get a pair of sunglasses with data that can predict fights.
Right. If you're going to pick, right, and you're probably going to mention this as well, you probably had the same thought as me, but if you were going to pick a piece of apparel, a piece of attire that you could store data to make you the ultimate fighter, you would not pick fucking sunglasses. That is the last thing you're going to wear in a fight.
But it looks so
cool.
Because
they fall off! Or they fall off, you know.
But it looks so cool, though, and that's the whole point of this movie.
Just imagine like a data tank top, something like that. I stored all of your fighting. I know all of your move list when I wear this tank top.
Now that I have your attention, let me introduce you to the future. Now it's time to harvest.
Okay, now what?
Donovan has begun the download. We gotta go.
Do you think it'll really work?
Of course! I created it!
So, with these magical sunglasses, can predict fights. So he brings out, so he actually then brings out Kasumi's brother, who he is so who he has tied up and ready to fight. Although it's a very unfair fight, really, because he has sort of clearly been there for about a year.
He's literally not moved. He does say, though, that I've kept him in peak fighting condition. So I would argue that you haven't. He's currently tied up, good sir.
Yeah. So they have, so in other words, they have a fight. And what this kind of does, it reminds me a little bit, but in a really bad way. It reminds me of like the Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr., where he's going like, and now you're going to go into capital discombobulate. That whole thing, right? It reminds me of that, but with sunglasses with like squares popping up and him trying to predict the fight. And so, but this is the thing. The whole thing is, I feel like, I don't think the sunglasses improve your fighting skill. It just predicts the fight for you so you can find out how to dodge, like, and always win. Like, it's cheater sunglasses, basically, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
So he beats up him. So he beats up the brother. And then it's like, now that I've done that, and thank you very much for the show, I'm going to steal more of your information, put it into my glasses, which with a giant beam of light. Zooming into the sunglasses.
Beam me up.
And then goes into saying, I'm now going to sell this on the black market around the world.
Six random pictures of people on the screen.
It's like, it's
even move.
It's the worst Zoom call, right? Like, here's a six. There you go. Bish, bash, bosh. Bob's your uncle. And then, luckily, Weatherby and Helena are in the security room trying to stop this from happening with the most early noughties, late 90s hacking look, I think, in the history of ever. It's just type, intense looking, type, let's hope this works, type. So basically, they're trying to do that. They stop the transaction from happening. Obviously, Eric is pissed off. Eric is pissed off and goes and says, Bayman, try and find out what's happening here. Because in the
meantime, shit out of Weatherby.
But he finds out something. Max has finally gone to the vault and he's about to rob it when Bayman finds this and then knocks him the fuck out so he can steal the money, so he can prepare, because Eric Roberts is about to leave and do all this nonsense. Eric sets out a bizarre only 3 minute self-destruct.
because I mean, why would you need a self-destruction option anyway? But what I did enjoy, because there's also the scene where Eric afterwards goes in and he stops Weatherby from trying to open up the last pod. He's on the last pod, isn't he? He's got the last one to do. As we both have established, he's been furiously typing for a good 5 minutes at this point.
Yes.
Then finally he gets knocked out, he's left for dead, and all it takes is just one solo
touching a button. Yes, it's like I need to press the space bar.
I was so close. I just need to press one more button. Press the one button, and they are released from their pods.
That's not how hacking works, right?
Pretty sure. I mean, I've not really got into hacking much myself, I've got to be honest, but I'm pretty sure it doesn't work like that.
This is hilarious. They bust through the Buddha. And they have this giant fight.
Yes.
They have this giant weird ass ladder fight in the tower that was near the beginning.
Yeah,
and I'm not gonna lie.
They're trying to climb up. Yeah,
yeah. And here's the thing: I got the feeling that half the women were doing this. Eric Roberts, dude, you are not doing the splits. You are not doing any of this.
That's not for you.
And I think this explains the sunglasses and the wig, because I feel like that's a way to cover someone's face when you're trying to do some of the shots.
Because, true.
And so everyone kind of comes out high, boost to the brother. Everyone's sort of like, we're going to go taking him 6-on-1, basically. So, because everyone's falling off ladders. There's like weird crisscrossing. There's splits. There's people doing punches. There's a bit where Eric Roberts is angry with a bunch of chains and just goes, But then this leads to one thing, which they don't really explain a lot, but they do explain in the deleted scene about the five sisters. Do you know how the brother... I think it's the brother, actually, who's running underneath Eric Roberts at this point, does an uppercut with this and hits the pressure point at the bottom of his foot, right?
Yes.
And then you see all the blood circulating, all that nonsense, right?
Yeah.
This was a technique called the Five Sisters technique, which was somehow completely scrapped. There were scenes which we see earlier on where Kasumi's kidnapped, and the brother uses literally needles, little needles and acupuncture points to freeze people and knock them out, right? There were far more discussions about this acupuncture technique in order to make sense of it. Because when this scene happens and you do the uppercut to the foot, this is the first time that has ever happened. And it doesn't explain that this is a thing. Kasumi then comes out with a bunch of needles, punctures the back of Eric Roberts' head, neck, to keep him frozen. And then they, and then everyone else jumps, literally flying jumps out.
Apart from, is it Max and Weatherby who take the slide?
They take the slide down into the ocean.
Because that's going to be fast enough, yeah.
Yeah, and then everyone else does a flying jump out of it while everything explodes.
Don't you think that guy in the second row is cute?
Is there a guy in this world you don't have a crush on?
You can have him. But what about the other 300?
Why don't we just split them up evenly?
And so, that was Dead or Alive. Now, now I think it's about time we do the Trashometer.
Trashometer.
So, for anyone who's, if this is the first time listening to us, welcome. So we do reviews a little bit differently around here. We, instead of giving like a star rating or an A grade or anything like that, we do something called a Trashometer, where we break it down into five different sections. And in those sections, basically, it's figuring out where this movie kind of falls under our enjoyment of trash. So I'll go through them so everyone has a bit of a reminder. So first of all, we have tame. Tame means the movie was boring, not really trashy at all, wasn't really fun, just, but not like in an angry way. It was just a bit dull. It was boring. Nothing fun happening, right? You then got a tiny bit trashy. Tiny bit trashy where it was fun and there's bits that would definitely will remember in the zeitgeist. But it feels like it could have been more. Like they could have really gone more into something. They could have added more to it, or they could have done something a little bit more to be more enjoyable. Then you have trash. Trash is the sweet spot, the perfect middle, the golden goose, the ultimate finishing move of all trash movies, right? Then you've got too trashy. Too trashy is we're still enjoying it, but there's definitely moments we're getting angry at it. There's things we're not really, there's some bits which are sort of, we're getting a little annoyed at it, a bit frustrated about it, etc. And then there is torture. Torture is we had not had fun with this. We are angry at it. We are upset by it. We find it either offensive, horrible, just not a good time. So, Greg, since you are our guest, where would you put this on the Trashometer?
Okay, so there's two ways of looking at it. I would consider putting it at 2 because I feel like we had a lot of context missing from those deleted scenes.
Yes.
Right. Which would make it a perfect 3, but I think I'm willing to forgive that just because the film, it kind of knows what it wants to be. I think it is just dumb fun. There's relatively decent fights and there's a lot of naked bodies going around there.
Yeah.
I'm giving it a 3, man. I'm giving it a 3.
And you know what? I'm kind of in the same boat here, but if I was going to put it like on the higher end, as it were, I would put it on the higher end of trash because I feel like there were moments we're getting frustrated with it, but I feel like the reason why is because I can see what they were trying to do, but too many people were shouting at it. In other words, I'm going to compare this to Street Fighter the movie for a second. Street Fighter the movie, I put it as torture. I genuinely don't like the movie. I feel like I feel like even though I had a lot of fun with it, I was more angry than anything else. And I might even consider a review of it being more too trashy than torture. But it is bad because I can generally sense the corporateness underneath it. I sense this is clearly people who had no idea what they wanted to do. Loads of clashing ideas leading into something that doesn't even resemble the game. Here, I can tell off the bat this is Dead or Alive. I know for a fact that this is based off the video game. It knows
100% has the aesthetic.
Exactly. It knows what it's doing, and I'm going to agree with Ken Newman. To a weird way, this actually is the most faithful as an adaptation of its source material because in terms of how it feels like Dead or Alive.
Yeah. Yeah, it does feel like Dead or Alive. And so I think it hits the sweet spot. I don't think it's annoying. I don't think it's torture.
Yeah.
It's certainly not tame. Tame is the last word I would use to describe this movie in any way, shape, or form. I think it could have done with a little bit more context, especially if they are trying to give it story or lore.
Yeah.
So, you know, it could be a 2, but for me, I'm willing to forgive that. I think it was a 3.
And so on that point, this is going to be fully blown into on the trashometer as trash. Woohoo!
Ta-da!
It's got to be
perfect trash.
I was, be honest, having that discussion with you, and honestly, this is the thing, I was genuinely surprised you kind of liked this movie as well, because I'm sat there with a moment, I sat there thinking, look, I'm going to ease you in, but if you've not watched a lot of trashy movies, as I have, you're probably going to sit there, I genuinely thought you were going to hate it. I genuinely thought I was going to hate it too, to be honest.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't think it was by any stretch of imagination Oscar worthy.
Hell no.
But I it doesn't have to. I just enjoy the movie. I just accept it for what it was.
Yep, you have to let it gloss over you. This, like I said, this is a sugar rush of a movie. It feels like you, at the first 10 minutes or so, you've had way too many sugary donuts. And then it lags in between, but then the moment you start having more coffee and more donut and more sugar, and the more it starts adding more of that kind of cheesy rubbish, you get a kick again, and then all the boring parts you forget, and then you kick it back in again. You're almost it's almost like having a heart attack where you're constantly being revived at all the bits that you forgot about.
Yeah, I just felt like I needed a cigarette and some sleep afterwards.
Yeah, I was generally tired after this, but yeah. So Greg, thank you oh so very much for joining me on this episode. It's been my pleasure. I mean, Ed's not here, which is a shame, but to be frank, I think Ed didn't need to see this. I think we've given enough. I think Ed should go and watch it on his own. Maybe he can come back and tell me his opinion to add on to the trashometer. But I totally think this is it's just a fun trash movie, and I'm glad that you were able to join me on this journey.
No, thank you. I think, to be fair, Ed needs a break from it before you break his brain.
All right, and on that bombshell, thank you very much. Thank you very much for joining me. And so, until next time, keep an eye on your trash. There might be some treasure in there. See you guys next time.
Adios.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Thank you for listening to this podcast episode and hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share it around with movie lovers you know, maybe add a star rating or write a good review. All of this helps with the algorithm and provides us with more opportunities to reach the ears to a whole new bunch of bad film fanatics. Want to find out more about us? Then head over to our socials where we provide sneak peeks and up-to-date news on everything nostalgic and trashy. You can find our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages in the description. So please, follow us. See you next time, cinephiles.